Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Chronicles and Commons. In this episode, I want to kind of highlight. Well, I'm going to focus on Dragonborn and Draconians, but I want to highlight the work of Brent Newhall, who I interviewed in episode 13, and I want to start visiting his site more often for this show. I mean, I subscribe to his RSS feed, and it's well worth it. And if you haven't heard episode 13, you should go back and listen to it. He's a fascinating guy to listen to. He's got a lot of great ideas about game design, and he's very prolific. And one of his expressions of his creativity is found on his blog, geekarchaeology.com. If you click on the RPG or tabletop RPG tag, you'll get a lot of articles. And a lot of them are new and really interesting playable races or monster stats or factions for 5e and so on. So it's well worth following his work. And to that end, I want to start following his work a little bit more on this show, because it's a lot of really, really good Creative Commons content with lots of great ideas. And some of his ideas, harken back to Dungeons & Dragons, or to generic fantasy, or to Pathfinder, or whatever, in a lot of different and unique kind of ways. Whether that's intentional or not, I'm not sure what his inspiration is, although sometimes he does talk about what his inspiration is. But for what I'm talking about today, he's got a great article about a species or a race that he calls the Kala. The Kala are found on his world that he built called Tarakona. The Kala are draconic warriors of the plains. But before I talk about what Brent has to say about the Kala, and he has a lot to say about it, but before I do that, I want to look back and get a little bit of history on the concept of a draconic race. Now, as far as I know, and feel free to correct me if you have more material than I do, but the oldest hardcover book that I own from classic Dungeons & Dragons is a first edition, I would say a late first edition. It's right up against the second edition, because it's from 1987. But it's a Dragonlance Adventures book written by Tracy Hickman and Margaret Weiss. The serial number, or the code number, whatever, is 2021. And this is, as far as I know, the first appearance, I mean, maybe not this volume, but this world, Ancelon, the world of Dragonlance, is the birthplace of the Draconian or Dragonborn concept. Specifically, Draconians are the product of corrupted good dragon eggs, and they serve Takhesis, the evil god known as the Queen of Darkness. She is the Dragon Queen. And she likes to use Draconians as her warrior race because they're more regimented and they follow orders better than lesser creatures like goblins or ogres or what have you. So she uses the Draconians as her military force. There are five different Draconian forms in Dragonlance. There are the Araks, the Baz, the Bozax, the Kapax, and the Sivaks. And the Sivaks are the ones that can fly. They have four of these have wings. The Sivaks can actually fly. One of the magic-using ones has Dimension Door, and then the others are just kind of ground soldiers. But they're fierce, and they're all evil-aligned. They serve an evil goddess. And they all have the same origin story, and they have basically the same culture and, I guess, the same purpose in the story of the world of Kryn, of Dragonlance. So specifically, there's this, there's Takhesis, who is the Queen of Darkness and the Queen of Dragons, and her servants, her upper management team, is the cleric Wurlish, the mage Drakkart, and then an ancient red dragon named Harkiel the Bender. This unholy triad places arcane spells on good dragon eggs to open a gate to the abyss where the Dark Queen's minions inhabit the bodies of the little draconian babies that were about to be born. And that's where they all come from. That's the Dragonlance. That's the official Dragonlance story of the draconic races. And ever since then, draconians have kind of been a staple of D&D. They've been around since, obviously, late first edition at least. They were a playable race at least in fourth edition and certainly in fifth edition. And if you have the player's handbook for fifth edition, you can look on page, I think it's 34, and find the Dragonborn character that you can actually play. And up in the upper right corner is the lore behind draconians in the Dragonlance setting. It gives you a little paragraph just about how the draconians in Dragonlance were played. And obviously, as a playable race, they're a lot more flexible. But there's not a whole lot of information, and that's kind of where I'm getting to with all of this. Compared to certainly the rich lore of Dragonlance, I mean, with series and series of books and source books and campaigns and everything that Dragonlance has, there's a lot of information to draw from. Whereas 5th edition, it's pretty much the two pages, 33 and 34, about draconians or dragonborn, as they are specifically called when they're a playable race, I guess, in 5th edition. And that's all you have to go on. It's not a whole lot to work with. So I thought it was really cool then that Brent Newhall came up with this playable race he's calling the Kala, who are draconic warriors of the plains. This provides an alternate background for draconians or dragonborn or whatever you want to call them, half human, half dragon warrior race, in the event that you don't necessarily want to go off of what 5th edition provides you, or maybe you want something alternate, even alongside of the 5th edition dragonborns. Maybe you want there to be a tribe of other dragonborns with a different history than what maybe the default provides in 5th edition. Now, with all this being said, I should mention that Brent, the post that he made on the Kala does not actually invoke anything I was talking about. He does not cite Dragonlance as an inspiration or dragonborn or anything like that. So I don't mean to imply that he is revising the dragonborn race. I'm simply saying, from my point of view, that's how I see the Kala. Now, if you want to see them as a stand-in for kobolds or lizard folk or whatever, I mean, they are lizard folk, but just a generic lizard folk, then that's fine too. But I kind of took it as a revised version of dragonborn, mainly because I had recently built a dragonborn from 5th edition and kind of realized that I didn't have a whole lot of background to go off of. Anyway, let's look at what Brent says about the Kala. So the Kala are a fierce humanoid lizard race who live in the plains of whatever your campaign setting is. They were created as laborers. Kala are strong, but not particularly bright. So a little bit of an echo there of the Dragonlance draconians, I think. They capitalize on their strength by developing a strong warrior culture of hunters and soldiers. For the first few generations of Kala, they established small clans of maybe 20 or 50, each one led by a chief living off the bounty of the western grasslands. At some point, one warrior rose to prominence, named Dak One-Eye. Dak One-Eye had been given a magical hammer by the god Ahm, A-H-M, with the instructions to unite the Kala as one empire in Ahm's name. Other clans fell under Dak's banner, forming the Empire of Aam. Dak received many other visions and teachings of Aam, which evolved into a complex religion. The Kala were able to conquer the Western Plains, and they established a civilization there. And interestingly, they even have, I mean, they're tribal by nature, but they have actual cities. Although several, you know, there's a faction or a portion of Kala that do not live in cities. There's the wilder nomadic Kala who don't go into the cities. They mostly peacefully coexist, although apparently there have been squabbles here and there, depending on, I guess, resources or whatever. Now, the Empire of Aam is led by the Charl, currently Charl Torin of the Piercing Gaze. According to the fourth scroll of Aam, the Charl must be a warrior in spirit, noble in bearing, fierce in war, decisive in home, and dedicated entirely to preserving the worship of Aam. This basically is a generic strong warrior with a level head and respect for religion. Torin, the current Charl, certainly combines these attributes, though he's a better administrator than a fighter. This reputation has earned him some enemies among the war chiefs. Just below the Charl in rank are the priests and priestesses of the eight orders of Aam. And each gender of the Kala has a specific religious role. Males, the Karani, serve as counselors and laymen, really. They perform basic rites, like the seventh day naming of a child. The females, the Desan, may dance, only the females may dance the holy dances and participate in the holiest of rites directly to Aam. The High Council of Desan, of female Kala, also chooses the next Charl should the current Charl die. And given that we're talking about a warrior race here who live out in the plains, lots of tribes, it goes without saying that a Charl usually doesn't die of old age. That's not a luxury they usually get. Below the priesthood sits the warrior class. These are organized into battalions named according to their originating clan. The battalions are led by war chiefs, and each battalion votes for its war chief, though these elections are usually not necessarily the fairest of elections. I mean, they don't have an advanced electoral system, in other words. Then again, who does? So some of the most powerful clans right now are the Piercing Gaze, which you may recognize as the home clan of the current Charl Torin, Everstride, Deep Shadow, and Thousand Spears. The rest of the Kala population, those who are not warriors or priests or the Charl, is made up of the common class, including all the usual sorts of people you would find in a city or a tribe. You know, you'd have potters and weavers and ranchers. They are omnivores, but they do prefer meat, and they tend to think of farming as something that's a little bit limited. It ties you down to one spot, which kind of goes against their nomadic belief, I guess. But they do, you will find a garden in the cities, you know, some gardens for vegetables and fruits and things like that. And each clan has kind of a reputation for the thing that they do best. I mean, other clans do the same thing, but there's a bit of a reputation about which clan might, I don't know, be the best rancher, or the best pottery comes from this clan, or the best weapon work comes from this, or the best stone work comes from that clan. And stones and rocks in the Kala culture are highly significant. They place importance on the shape of stones, whether they were naturally made that way or carved that way. They carry stones with them as a kind of a totem or a good luck charm. They often set up standing stones to absorb evil or as sites of worship, believing that powerful spirits are attracted to stonework or stone of a particular size. The cities that the Kala create are actually fairly simple, so in spite of their their love of stone. They don't shape a lot of stone into, for instance, their buildings. I mean, they may decorate buildings with stonework or something, but the houses and the buildings are usually low to the ground, maybe two stories at the highest. They're made out of simple materials like adobe or simple brick. Not super elaborate, and you get kind of the feel, or at least I got the feel, that maybe the cities, though stationary and very much not friendly to the concept of being a nomad, and there's some friction there, because the nomadic Kala, who live out on the plains moving around, they tend to think of themselves, you know, they live in nomadic camps, and they consider themselves to be more traditional, to be better observing traditional values, and they tend to look down on city dwellers. But the cities that do exist, I feel, maybe are influenced by that nomadic tendency, because something like building a pyramid out of elaborate stonework would be very much non-nomadic, whereas something simple like here's some adobe or here's some simple brick that we baked in a big oven and are now constructing our houses out of, sure, there's permanence there, but it isn't the same significance as something like a dwarf might do, like carving cities into stone walls of mountains and so on. Family life for the Kala starts out unique from, I think, most human families, but kind of evolves into something that looks awfully human. So the young who are hatched from eggs are raised by the clan. Mothers are expected to care for their infants initially, but after the child is weaned, parentage is basically ignored, and the clan takes over. Adolescents are encouraged to explore strong relationships, because Kala are very emotional creatures. They're not dumb brutes. They actually have feelings, and they have relationships. They are sexually celibate until they are bonded, which is a rough equivalent to marriage. Kala bond deeply to their mates, to the point that infidelity is a capital crime. There are several religious festivals throughout a Kala year. There are some listed, actually. The Feast of the High Sun, the Fast of Thek, the Festival of the Waxing Moon, the 3-day festival, the 5-day festival, the Feast of Forgiveness, the Coming of Age, the Gift of the Dead. And they do like to party. They are celebratory creatures. They, as I say, they have feelings. They aren't big dumb brutes like you might think. You know, if you read up on Draconians from Dragonlance, you might not get this kind of... You might impose that on the Kala, and that would be a mistake, because they love to party. They love their festivals. It's not a good it's not a proper festival unless a dish has been broken, is a saying among the Kala. So they're rowdy. They believe that companionship enhances emotion, and they seek that out, and sometimes to a fault. Sometimes they jump into a friendship without really judging whether that's a healthy friendship or whether that person is maybe someone you want to befriend and hang around with. They are also, however, highly religious. Keep that in mind. I mean, their society is one of their... I mean, their charl is supposed to be the leader and religious keeper of the teachings of Om. So they are highly religious, but most outsiders have a very difficult time understanding the subtleties of the religion, as well as the more overt parts of the religion. Just the schedule of religious holidays is quite complex. Of course, the first charl, I assume, Doc One Eye, the one who united all of the Kala, was actually, well, first he was just an energetic, just a warrior class Kala. He was just an everyday Karani in his youth, according to the records that survive and talk about Doc in his youth. In some of the teachings, though, it starts to lean heavily towards pacifism, and whether that's embellishment, sort of religious embellishment, or whether he was a pacifist is not entirely maybe certain, but it is a tenet of their religion, pacifism. However, they don't think of pacifism as something that they are obligated to do. So they don't throw down their weapons at the sight of conflict. In fact, they interpret the concept of pacifism as kind of a necessary thing that you have to do sometimes in order to survive. That is, sometimes you have to not fight. The pragmatic way that the religion is expressed kind of on a day-to-day basis is once again divided along the lines of gender. So the Qurani, or the males, and the Desan, the females. The Qurani, the males, tend to emphasize self-discipline, self-reliance, and self-control, and zest for raw emotion, which again is very important to them. They teach these kind of on a day-to-day basis. They're just the typical lessons that you might get while learning how to be a good Kala. Whereas the Desan, the females, being really the official priesthood of the religion, I mean, they're the ones who oversee the 3-hour weekly religious rites attended by all Kala at the temples or the shrines. They lecture on pacifism and the importance of preserving the Kala race and culture. Now, if you encounter a Kala out in the wild world, you might encounter, for instance, a raiding party, one of the nomadic tribes deciding that they need some supplies from a settlement or from your camp. The general build of such a party would be maybe a handful of warriors, some archers for range attacks, some war casters, led by one elite warrior. The warriors swarm the most physically powerful enemy first, directing their archers to do the same, while the war casters keep other enemies at bay. Once the first enemy dies, the warriors leap to the next most powerful enemy in turn. Brent, the creator of the Kala, not in-game, I mean Brent, is the person who, you remember what I said at the beginning of the episode, has a bunch of Kala warriors specced out on his blog, and I will go over those specs and those stats in the next episode of this installment, of the Kala installment. Overall, I'm a big fan of the Kala race. I think that it is ripe for use within any campaign setting or fictional setting, because it gives you everything that the Dragonborn suggests, but without the explicit backstory of the originals in Dragonlance. Which, not that the originals in Dragonlance are bad, but, well, first of all, they're not Creative Commons, but then second of all, they are very specific, and they're very kind of evil, and they have a very specific origin, whereas Kala, there's a lot of variety there. You could do all kinds of things with the Kala. You could have evil clans, you could have good clans, you could have mixtures. You could have your player, Dragonborn player, go back to their home city or find their nomadic tribe. There's just so much to work for, to work with. It's a really, really rich, fleshed out society. So thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next time with Kala Stats. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as Not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.